For those of you who are listening for the first time, welcome. And for those of you who have been long-time listeners, welcome back. My name is Chu Lin. I haven't been around for a bit, but I will be back very soon. So I will hand you now to the very good hands of Mike Fong, Daniel Cervantes, and Bernard Leong.
This week in Asia, well, this is me, Bernard, who has been taking a one-month break. And sitting right across me here is my co-host, Daniel Cervantes.
Hello, I'm back in Singapore.
Oh, yeah. Well, you've been traveling a lot in the US lately, right?
Yes, I have, actually. And not only US, I mean, just came back from Bangkok, in fact. Mm.
Right where we are both in, we are in Hackerspace Singapore. And sitting across on this side is our dear co-producer, Mike Fong. Hi, Mike.
Hey. How are things?
I'm pretty okay. Just hitting 4 million impressions soon.
Great. We always like to hear that.
Yeah. But we have a very, very special...
Well, before that, I mean, this has been a while. Been about 2 months since we all actually been together.
Yeah.
So, cheers to that.
Cheers to that. So, I can only tell you now is that we got money in the bank.
No, I haven't sold the podcast, but something's going up.
Okay, cool. In any case, we have a very, very special guest today with us, and I think she's really tired after a real long panel with Ben Joff, and she's none other than...
It's been a long week.
Yes. See, we got her on there. And that's Sarah Lacey from TechCrunch, and who's also the author of a book that I did the earliest review, Once You're Lucky, Twice You're Good. Did I get it right?
You did.
What's the title of the second book?
Brilliant. Wait, do you want the whole title or the subtitle? Because you just gave the first title of the other one.
The first title.
Brilliant, crazy, cocky. Do you want the rest?
Yes. What's the rest?
How the top 1% of entrepreneurs profit from global chaos.
Wow.
Da, da, da.
Okay. So I guess the first question that usually I would always ask is, what brings you here to Southeast Asia? This is your first trip, right?
Well, I was offered an opportunity to be on this podcast. And
you can't resist that, right? I mean, come on.
Can we send this clip to Leo after that?
Like they said, they have funding, and they gave me a huge check to fly to Singapore and be on this podcast, and a wine glass full of scotch. So how could I say no to that?
That was from Chu Lin LaFroy, by the way.
No, he bought it from Japan.
Korea.
Oh, this is
Dude, Americans are the ones that Asians are supposed to all blend together. You should know the difference between Korea and Japan.
I didn't know where I went. Because, like I said, we did a recording in Kansas City the last time around. Mm-hmm. And he was in Korea. You were in Japan.
Yep.
And I was standing...
You were in Kansas.
I was in Kansas. And our other friend who was usually traveling around in Jakarta, because he was Singapore.
Wow.
Yeah.
So. And he's the Caucasian guy. The guy in Singapore was the Caucasian guy.
I was like, he's not a Caucasian guy.
I'm not Caucasian. I'm Chinese. You're all Chinese.
Yeah. But speaking of which,
so what do you want to know what actually brought me to Singapore? Because you didn't actually pay me any money. I should be clear, because there will be a scandal on Gawker tomorrow. Podcast pays Sarah Lacey. She flies to Singapore.
Yeah.
No, so I actually did first get a the government. First of all, I'd wanted to come to Singapore for a long time. The two biggest things that piqued my interest in Singapore, other than the outrageous crunch pad scandal, is I spent a lot of time in Rwanda for the book, and Rwanda is a country that's very patterned itself off of Singapore. And I'm incredibly impressed with what Rwanda's built and how they've used a lot of aid money to build out their infrastructure. And considering they had patterned themselves on Singapore, I was very interested to see what Singapore had done. The other one was being in Indonesia, which I spent time in for my book. And people in Indonesia have a huge chip on their shoulder about Singapore because they have just a billion natural resources and one of the largest countries in the world. And yet Singapore has such a higher income per capita than Indonesia. And there's this real frustration in Indonesia of, like, how has Singapore pulled this off and why can't we do this? So those two places are actually what piqued my interest the most in coming to Singapore. A friend of mine who's doing some PR for the IDEA called me and said, the IDEA wants a Silicon Valley reporter to come to Singapore. They're willing to pay for everything. They want someone to cover it. You know, they thought of you first since, you know, which is probably a lie, but they thought of you first since you, have covered so much stuff. And I said, well, you know, I do want to come to Singapore, but I'm not going to take any money from the government because I'm quite sure that I'm going to criticize the government for something and I don't want to take money from someone and then go cover it. But I was going to Indonesia for an event, so I said, you know, perfect. It's an excuse to come. Mm.
So what have you found so far with respect to sort of Singapore's ecosystem, also Indonesia's ecosystem? After all, this show is this week in Asia, so we're going to get much of your sense about Asia.
Yeah, you've been in China, you've been in Indonesia.
India.
And Rama talks a lot about him anyway.
I love Rama.
Yeah, Rama's fantastic.
You know what I say about Rama? So anytime I introduce anyone in Silicon Valley to Rama, and anyone, so I have so many Silicon Valley companies from like Google size, Zynga size, VCs, everyone in the last couple of months has come to me and said, I need to go to Indonesia. Please introduce me to Indonesian people. I'm totally freaked out. It's crashing my servers, and I don't understand it. And every time, so Rama is one of the core people I introduce everyone to. And I always introduce him as, he has the influence of Michael Arrington, but the cuddliness of Om.
he is.
And he's a very good friend of our show, too.
Yeah, the best thing, the first time I met Rama is like, hey, I'm a big fan of your site. You know, can you come on the show? Hey, I'm a big fan of the show.
Yeah. Dude, that guy, like, I don't know how he consumes as much media as he does.
Yes, I know, yeah.
He knows and not only does he know everyone in his scene, which is one thing, but, like, I sent him a note the other day, and this was on Twitter today. So, it's a friend of mine whose last name is Sippy. Like, every time he gets on Twitter in the morning and does a search, because his username is Sippy, because that's his last name, that's what everyone calls him. Every time he does a, like, at mention, he's every morning when he wakes up in California time, he sees all these Indonesian teens and they're like, Sippy, Sippy! And then all this time in Bahasa, he's like, what the hell? And so he was like, Sarah, what does this mean? And I was like, I don't speak Bahasa. So I asked Rama, and Rama said, I said, I have a friend whose name is Sippy. And people can say this, and he's like, oh, it's like teenage slang for, like, yes, yes, which is a hilarious thing to tell to, like, a middle-aged married guy in America. But Rama says this to me, and then he goes, are you talking about Michael Sippy from Six Apart? Dude, like, you are a robot. Like, he's secretly an android that has just the web's community downloaded into his mind.
Yeah, I recently bought an android phone, actually.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's like a Battlestar Galactica-style android, not an actual android phone.
Oh, you mean like Cylon?
Yes, yes. I mean, he's like the old-school android. Like, yeah, like he is a computer person, is
Rama,
what I meant.
Rama is fantastic. And, I mean, one of the reasons that he's coming here, I mean, when you are here, is you go to SparkCup, which is next week.
It is.
Yeah.
So, and you're all going, right?
I am, but I'm not too sure about this guy and this guy.
I'm going to Korea.
I have work
He's
to
going
do.
To Japan.
I'm going to Japan again. I'm going to China, actually.
Oh, you're going to China. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Like I said, the show has been a bit sketchy because we've all been traveling.
Yeah. Because we're all drinking too much scotch out of wine glasses.
But here's a very interesting question that I sort of wanted to get you. You wrote a very interesting article some time back about China. You're talking about, like, you know, in Bali, every revolution comes in steps, but in China, everything was happening all at one go.
Serial versus parallel.
Yeah, Reggie read all
your articles. You read one, thank you.
Yeah. So, I sort of want to get your thoughts in Indonesia, your thoughts after visiting Indonesia, Singapore, Israel, I think you went to Rwanda as well. What are your thoughts on these, like, new emerging markets? Are they going to be like China, or is it going to be closer to more like what Silicon Valley has been through?
I think it's closer to Silicon Valley. I think China is the only place that is just a parallel land grab. China is just a unique phenomenon in economic history. There's just never been a country before that had 1 billion people that has grown so quickly, that has made so much money, that has minted so many billionaires by the week in so many different industries. I mean, it is just like, I just think that we don't step back enough, and I mean we as like the global population of people in business or covering business or interested in business, we don't step back enough to just think about what we're witnessing that's happening in China now. I mean, as a whole, we don't think back enough to start thinking about Asia as a whole. You have Indonesia, you have India, you have China. And, like, that doesn't even take into account what the government has, like, concocted in Singapore. That doesn't take into account, you know, Vietnam. That doesn't take into account the, you know, innovation that happens in South Korea. I mean, so it's like, even if you don't even get into, like, the periphery, just what is happening in India, what is happening in China, and what is happening in Indonesia? The world has never seen anything like this, ever. I mean, it's phenomenal. And, I mean, China is the single most phenomenal part in terms of, not necessarily in terms of, like, triumph of human spirit, like you see in a lot of Indian companies and a lot of Indonesian companies and a lot of African companies, but like in terms of just the sheer land grab. Like, I talked to a guy who, I mean, the thing that's amazing about China is it's like we talk about, like, you know, them being this capitalist country. I mean, I mean, Vietnam is a communist country. Vietnam is a capitalist country. I mean, they're more capitalist than America. You know, the people in Silicon Valley are dying for some sort of other way to get liquid other than the NASDAQ because post Sarbanes-Oxley and with all this more, you know, legislation, no one can go public. And returns in Silicon Valley have fallen off a cliff in the last 10 years. What China has done with the startup board in Shenzhen is absolutely mental. I mean, it is amazing and it is cutting edge. It is the most cutting edge capitalism that I've seen. And it's happening in China. And it's like, good God, a lot of those companies are going to crash and burn. And a lot of people are going to lose billions. But a lot of people are, it's such a high delta. And it's like, I had a meeting in China that was incredibly off the record with one of the guys. So I'll talk about it. With one of the guys who will remain nameless. No one listens to what I'm talking about. So with one of the guys who was who's on the committee that vets whether companies can go public on the startup board or not. And, I mean, I asked this guy. I was just like, dude, like, how do you deal with, like, the pressure of, like, having to vet these things that are still so speculative and put them out for a public market? Because that's what keeps people up at night with expand, you know, having a new exchange, even secondary market, which is so restricted in Silicon Valley. And he was like, well, you know, we have regular terms and conditions. And I'm like, yeah, okay, but what does your approval mean? Does your approval that it's listing mean that you vetted them and they're not committing fraud? Or does it mean that this is a good business? Like, and is it clear to the people investing in this company what your endorsement means? And he just kind of hung his head and he was like, look, honestly, you have no idea the anxiety I carry around with me every day. My thumbs up or thumbs down vote is literally creating billionaires every week. So that didn't even happen in the dot-com bubble.
So I take it from your first book that you wrote about. You wrote about the PayPal mafia.
Yes.
Extensively. Do you see the same kind of PayPal mafia structure happening in China?
No, it's too big.
Oh, okay.
It's too big. I mean, and this is what pisses me off when people say, you know, China is the next Silicon Valley. It's like, we're talking about a country more than a billion people with industries that are being expanded exponentially across every industry is the same thing as a computer industry in a 50-mile stretch of an orchard, like where they used to be an orchard. Like, the two are just so different. I mean, in Silicon Valley, you're talking, I mean, Silicon Valley and Beijing aren't even comparable because it's spread out. It's not this, like, magnet of ecosystem. I mean, what's been so unique about Silicon Valley is, like, not only the geographic density of how much money and companies and innovation has come out of one tiny 50-mile stretch area, but it's the degree to which, you know, how fluid it's been between them, the fact that it's happened sort of decade after decade after decade, and the fact that it's, like, by the very nature, there have been communications and technology infrastructure that have sort of reached around the world. I mean, like, Silicon Valley is not even a sustainable Silicon Valley. I mean, it was something that for this moment of time was the place for this revolution to happen in this one industry that happened to be very impactful. And, you know, I mean, I feel incredibly fortunate to have been there for the last 10 years of it. But, like, that's never going to happen again because, like, the internet isn't going to start again. You know, and it's like that, and it's also the fact that it's like Silicon Valley is a one industry town. I mean, it's like Hollywood with movies. It is like Manhattan with Wall Street. I mean, it's seriously. So my husband is an artist, and he's like very indie rock and very cool. And
also, he's like a musical artist. I got the impression he was a painter or something like that.
He's a photographer.
Oh,
yeah, okay. Yeah. So he's incredibly like hipster cool. He used to be a DJ. You know, all this. So whenever we have parties, like, we have all of, like, his cool San Francisco friends, and then it's just, like, millionaire nerds. And it's, like, every party we have, the millionaire nerds keep taking over. And he's, like, and it will do me doing this, and he's, like, no more nerds. Like, no more nerds. And it's, like, I mean, that is San Francisco in a nutshell.
Yeah, your friends,
right? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't have any cool friends. Trust me.
And you're not going to name CEOs of which companies, right?
I won't tell you. So we had this. I will say this is hilarious. We have an annual barbecue every year, and I'm from Memphis, which is like the barbecue hub in San Francisco.
Yes.
I mean, barbecue hub in San Francisco. God, could I be more tired? The barbecue hub in America and the world. So in Memphis is also home to FedEx, so you can get ribs packed in dry ice and FedEx to you immediately off the 12-hour smoking. So we do that, and then I make award-winning fried chicken. So I make like 300 legs of fried chicken, wow. And we invite like everyone. And we hold it in August because everyone's out of town in August, and otherwise it'd be 800 people at the party. So I will say this: we were cleaning up the backyard, and we had sort of these paper tablecloths on every table, and we actually got a term sheet sketched out on one of the tablecloths.
Oh my gosh, it's very funny.
Only in Silicon Valley.
Okay, so let's talk about like companies in Asia. Which ones really caught your mind? Like, you know, you've seen many companies, right?
Yeah, I mean,
tell us about some of the companies that really caught your mind.
When I was traveling over there, I asked a lot about Asian companies. What do you know about Malaysian companies? What do you know about Singapore companies, Indonesia? And zero.
Crickets, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the companies there. I mean, for us, like companies like Farm or companies like MOL, Malaysia Online Buying Over Friends, those are news to us. But it's just like, zoop, nothing.
Well, like, I'll do you one better. I guarantee you 90% of Americans have never heard of Tencent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Third largest internet company in the world by valuation. I mean, and this is the thing. It's like people, so a lot of Asian companies have nothing to gain by marketing to the U.S. And so, and at the same time, I mean, this is one thing that spurred me to write my book, because our media has been so bought up by all these big publicly traded national chains, and the industry has come under fire, and that drives cost cuts, and they have to be these profitable, high-performing areas, and so it's like cut, 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 cut. It's like no business reporters ever travel anymore. It is so hard, even at a newspaper or magazine that's doing well, to convince someone to like spend money to send you overseas. And if they do, it's like, what is your story going to be in advance? And so you're like sitting in New York, and you're like, okay, what's the story I could do about India? Well, there's outsourcing. I'm going to do a story about outsourcing, because that's the only thing that you know that's going on in India. So that's why like every cover about India is about outsourcing. So then the company says, okay, great. Story about outsourcing, that sounds interesting. We will pay for 2 days. So, okay, so you need to make sure you plan every meeting in advance. You basically plan everything about story. You sell a story. You plan the reporting. You do everything in advance. So then you get there and you don't do any reporting.
So there's no discovery of like...
No.
That's sad.
It is.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know what? So what I did with this book is I would like go places for a minimum of 2 weeks at a time, you know, 2 to 4 weeks. And I did like 3-4 trips to each place. So I'd go there for a minimum of 2-4 weeks. I'd have no meetings planned.
Nice.
And bear in mind, I was bootstrapping this out of myself. So it's like I'm spending all this money my husband and I don't have. I'm going to like China where I don't know the language. Or I'm going to Indonesia where it's like, I just realized Indonesia was a country. Like, I don't know. Literally, at one point, my husband was so kind. He's a graphic designer, and he like laminated these big maps, and I put them all in my office at home. And I was going to put pins in the places I was going. And I was just like, I came out at one point, and I go, I can totally understand why no one wanted to fund this book. I literally can't find Beijing on a map. I mean, I knew nothing. And it's like, you go there, and you're just like, shit, I'm spending about $7,000 over the next couple weeks to be in this country, and I got no meetings. And by the end of it, I would always find really interesting things. But it's really hard to take that gamble. And most Americans just won't do it. So it's like, that's why we don't know about any of these companies. Because they're not pitching us, and we're not going out and finding them.
So where do you do your research?
So I'm sorry?
Where do you do your research?
On the ground.
On the ground?
In countries, yeah. So I spent 40 weeks in the countries. And I mean, I definitely barely scratched the surface, like, admittedly. Like, I mean, there's, you know, I met with probably, like, at sort of parties and events and sort of like catacomb pitches, like hundreds of companies. But in each sort of section of the book, I mean, there's two or three I focus on. For TechCrunch, I usually would do, you know, between like 5 and 6 posts per trip, per country. So it's like, I definitely like don't, you know, pretend to be the expert about any of this stuff. But it's like, it's just the fact that it's like, it's the talking dog thing. You know, it's like a dog can walk up and just be like, you know, oh, Windows Vistas is awesome. And you'd be like, well, that's stupid, but you're a talking dog. I mean, that's almost the point at which, as an American business reporter, you can be talking about emerging markets, and you still know more than anyone else. And, I mean, by the way, this is where all the growth is coming from, and it's billions of the world population that's driving it. And it's, and you know, America hasn't grown substantially as an economy for 10 years. So it's like, it's not just like, oh, things are awesome here, and then there's this other stuff happening, but things are awesome here. It's like, there's nothing here. All this is happening. Shit.
So,
can I say shit on your show?
Yeah, yeah, sure. No, it's okay. We don't have the thing.
Right. You mean the censorship?
Yeah, we don't have that, right?
No, we can do that.
Oh, we need to do that for iTunes.
My husband always gets mad at me for swearing on things. He thinks
it's not the most swear so far. But.
I know. But you know what? My parents get upset, and then my parents call my husband, and then I hear about it. I hope my parents don't listen to your show. Are they what, two of your five viewers? I mean, listeners.
No, they are not.
We've got five listeners. So,
okay. You know. And the two are not my parents.
But
I just want to.
Maybe not.
Okay.
I don't know. There's probably two connections from the U.S.
Larry and Carol Lacey.
No, actually,
you recognize their names.
20% of our listeners are from the U.S.
Oh, yeah.
Oh shit. They might be my parents.
And 35%.
I just said shit again.
30% of them are from China.
Wow. Our well, my parents are not Chinese.
They are
so.
Probably one of the biggest English technology podcasts
in Asia.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because when I was in a party hosted by Digital Garage with Bistone, there, I have Japanese walking up to me and said, I've listened to your show.
I have a girl who came, I was at one of the Silicon Valley pitches. The girl came to me and I'm like, are you Dennis from the speak in Asia?
Wow.
Not that we're boasting, but.
Are you guys dating now?
Yeah.
Are you guys dating now?
I have a girlfriend for 3
years.
Yeah.
Oh. He's a
that would have been a good story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's only one single.
No.
No.
No, you're not single anymore.
Not anymore.
Wow, I missed a lot.
But, that's what happens when you're all in different countries.
It's been a very busy time for me. That's why it's going to happen.
Tell us about your new girlfriend.
She's great.
She's really great. Does she have a name?
They're in stealth mode.
No. But she's a very private person. So she,
All I can say she's an entrepreneur.
Yeah, she's entrepreneur.
So you know what they say? So this is the thing that Gawker pioneered, is like, if you're not in the industry, you're considered a civilian.
That's good.
So they would always call my husband a civilian, and they like left him out of it, which is really nice.
Exactly the same case with me. She's a civilian.
So you know what? If you never mention her, like other people won't out her. Like that's what I found in my husband. Like I always call him Mr. Lacey, which is not his last name because I kept my maiden name.
Okay.
Just to like totally, because he's just like, I don't want anything to do with that bizarre scene.
No nerds.
Okay.
No nerds.
Yeah, we're getting back to...
He would like you guys, though.
We're getting back to This Week in Asia, right? So,
but we're sitting in Asia this week, so inherently we're talking about This Week in Asia.
So give us an excerpt of your book.
The new one.
The new one?
Yeah. You'll be happy to market the book after
marketing the book.
Yeah. I mean, like an excerpt, like you want me to read something?
No.
Okay, sorry. What do you want?
No, what's the most exciting chapter that you're going to be talking about?
Oh, the most exciting.
You tell us.
You know, okay.
Okay, why should we read the book?
Yeah, why should we read it?
No, that's not a question.
Oh, you buy it.
We should be reading
it.
I'll be buying the book.
The last book was on the top sections in our book, in most of the bookstores here. The last book.
No, the new one is.
Because when I was walking past the largest bookstores, your book was actually one of like the most shown.
I don't think I even had a Singapore book deal, so that's interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I'm telling you, I'm telling you that you don't have a market.
We have borders.
Yes.
We have international.
But still, I only had like Western. I just want it to be read. I don't care.
So the story of that we just tell you is that your book was on the top of the shelves when it came out.
That's awesome.
I know of the book because I was watching you at the authors at Google because I usually watch that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I just thought, okay, that's a book I probably should take a look and read it. So I was like, oh, it's on it. And then I said, yeah, but tell us more, like, you know, what's good? What's
about the new book?
About the second
I'm sorry, there's no question.
You should read it.
So you should read this book because this is the one reason you should read this book in your Asia. Because no one would fund this book because everyone said to me, people in the U.S. don't care about people in other countries. So you should buy this book to prove all the stupid publishers wrong who said people don't care about people in other countries. You should buy it on principle, even if you don't think it's good, which you will, because it's awesome. You can pre-order it now. It's on Amazon now, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is it on the e-book?
It will be published. It's not because it's not released, but first day it's released, it will be published on the e-book. So you can pre-order it on Kindle now, and when it's released, it'll come out. No, you know, audiobooks are a weird market.
don't know. I just like audiobooks. So.
It's, look, I love it's audiobooks.
It works in Asia.
It's not me. Yeah. It's publishing.
It works in Asia because there's so many traffic jams here.
Yeah.
Tons of
dude, you were preaching to the choir. The CEO of Audible called Penguin and said, can we please do an audiobook for Once You're Lucky, Twice You're Good? And they didn't return his calls. It's a publishing issue. Oh, it's, I mean, it's a publishing industry legacy issue. It has nothing to do with me. I would be happy to sit here and read it to you. Yeah. It's... Let's get it. I'll read it.
But when it's out, we can definitely do something and help you promote the book as well.
It really is an amazing book because I think it's first of all, it's incredibly bizarre that it actually turned into a book because it was started as this sort of, you know, crazy, I'm going to go to emerging markets because I believe in emerging markets, but, you know, I don't know anything about them. Whereas the last book, I had spent 10 years in the Valley and knew very much. My proposal for the last book, parallels the first two-thirds of the book perfectly. I had all the access. I had first interview Mark Zuckerberg, he was 19. I knew the PayPal guys. You know, what I was selling was this unique access that I had. When I was selling this book, I was selling, like, guts because I didn't know anything. And that's what everyone said is, like, you don't know anything. And I was like, well, you believe I'm a good reporter or you don't. And so I felt like I really had something to prove. I felt like I was up against a wall. I felt like, I wanted to prove it was an interesting subject and these entrepreneurs were just as worthy in other countries. And, I think that the fact to which, the degree to which the book is inspirational and it's a great read and it's a great story has more to do with the phenomenon of emerging markets than it has to do with me.
Will it inspire the entrepreneurs here in Asia?
Oh, shit, yeah, man. Are you kidding? Are you kidding? I mean, the people that I picked are so ridiculously phenomenal. I mean, like you have like a slum kid in Brazil whose whole family were like, I should say his whole family are criminals because they're gonna be upset. But like his dad was a complete drug addict. They lived in like a tiny one room slum in the middle of nowhere, Brazil. His uncles were smugglers. His like cousins were like gunned down in drug battles. I mean, this kid was trying to stay alive every day, and he's now an internet entrepreneur in Sao Paulo who's raised millions of dollars and is like one of the most, you know, celebrated entrepreneurs. I mean, you know, I have like the, you know, Oprah of Indonesia in the book. I have, a consumer package mogul out of Rwanda. I talk about a guy from China who has a company that manufactures cell phones that are sold to the emerging world that's totally vertically integrated, like BYD. He has $1 billion in annual revenue. He owns 100% of the company. He's never been written about.
Wow. So what is your one advice to the listeners in Asia that's going to, wait for your book, waiting for the book, and what is the one thing you want to tell us here in Asia?
Well, I think one thing that like came out of the discussion that we had tonight at Hackerspace is this idea of you may not on the surface feel like you have a lot in common with someone living in like a village who like has started a big business that started out by selling like berries and flags on the side of the road, or you may not feel like you have a lot in common with a guy who's is a genocide survivor in Africa. But I think what you can learn from these people is that, you know, anything you can say that's an excuse of why you can't succeed or can't start a company is an excuse, you know? And it's like, if these guys can do it, you can absolutely do it. I think it's incredibly inspirational for that reason.
Wow, that's great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, no, just before we do, just one more thing.
He just gave the wrap-up sign, and then he took the microphone, and
No.
Wait, are you going to give us cars, Oprah? What's that?
You're getting a car. Wait. We are wrapping up.
You're wrapping up.
The last question that we usually ask our guests is, where do we find you, your website, your Twitter ID, so that we can get more followers from Asia?
Nice. Okay, so my website is... well, mostly TechCrunch, but also sarahlacy.com, which is Sarah with an H, LACUY. People always misspell. My Twitter handle is Sarahcuda, like Barracuda. Yeah. And is there anything else you want to know?
No.
My phone number?
Just tell none. It's okay.
Do you want to know? I shouldn't say my phone number. You have a new girlfriend.
Pitch to you?
Yeah. What do you plan?
I have a stealth startup.
Yeah. Actually have a startup you're willing to talk about would be my pitch advice. No, if anyone wants to pitch, I mean, the best thing, honestly, I am not as good at covering a huge volume of startups as a lot of my colleagues at TechCrunch. I tend to really pick and choose companies I write about, and I do much smaller volume, and I like to see things on the ground before I write about them and look an entrepreneur in the eye and get to know them. But if you have news, I mean, I know it sounds like it's like we're just giving you an email address, but tips at techcrunch.com goes to every single writer, and we read every single thing, and we work really hard to cover everything that comes in.
Wow.
Awesome.
Okay, by the way, before that.
No,
we have ended that, but before that, where do we find you, Mr. Daniel?
Honestly, it's going to go on for 44 minutes.
We will do that.
You're Steve Jobs. And one more thing.
No.
Where is my MacBook Air?
Well, I haven't had my boy yet. Anyway.
You find me in Malaysia for a TechCrunch meetup on 4th of November.
Where do you find you? And entrepreneurs.my, right?
Yeah, entrepreneurs.my.
We're having a meetup in Malaysia?
Yeah, with Sirkan.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Sirkan is our good friend.
Hey, Sirkan. If you're listening.
And Mike, where do you get in?
Metaculus.com.
And your Twitter ID?
Mike Fong, M-I-K-E-F.
Okay, so I'm just going to be saying that, well, let's do what we are now ready to do is the last cheers for This Week in Asia. Now, see? I don't even need to plug. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
That's a nice LaFroy for everybody.
Right.
Well, this is nice. Good stuff.
And this is your host, Bernard Leung, signing off. You can find me in twitter.com, BLeungCW, or Chalkboard, which every one of you know. And we're going to come back in the coming week, and we're going to have a lot more news for you. You can also find news in thisweekinasia.net, and our Twitter is thisweekinasia. And we look forward to seeing you. And check out the Leo Laporte plug. I need you, the things you say. Your past just give you away, the things you say. You're unbelievable.